Mail messed up. I recorded to this. There we go. Still recording over here. Yep, I think we are. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul. And tonight we're going to continue our study with the Urantia book on paper 165. And this is part two of the, what is this? The Purian mission begins, and this is, we're in section C, three, C, three, Sabbath sermon at Pella. And this is part two of the same paper, paper 165. It's just a continuation of such. And I did not include the page number on this flash screen. So let me go here to the first page and I'll tell you what it is. We're in paper, page 1819.9 of the original Urantia book, or paper 165.3.1, which is section 3.
165.
3.1, section 3, paragraph 1. Okay. And I'm going to let Diane start out reading tonight. Yep.
Three, Sabbath sermon at Pella. By the end of January, the Sabbath afternoon, multitudes numbered almost 3,000. On Saturday, January 28th, Jesus preached the memorable sermon on trust and spiritual preparations. After preliminary remarks by Simon Peter, the master said,
Notice it
"Notice it
says
says
here,
here,
trust and spiritual
spiritual
preparedness.
preparedness.
Okay, so
So
that this
that we
should
should
prepare you, we should be
be
prepared for
prepared for
work we're taking on as
I wish they would
disciples.
have included that in these papers.
What's that?
Trust and spiritual preparedness.
That's what this sermon's about.
Okay.
Okay, that's what they're saying here. Okay, and so here we go. Rodney, will you take the first one here?
Yes. What I've many times said to my apostles and to my disciples, I now declare to this multitude, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy, born of prejudice and nurtured in traditional bondage. Albeit many of these Pharisees are honest of heart, and some of them abide here as my disciples. Presently, all of you shall understand my teaching, for there is nothing now covered that shall not be revealed. That which is now hid from you shall all be made known when the Son of Man has completed his mission on earth and in
Okay,
the
right off
flesh.
the bat, I see a way that we can compare this to what happened, right? He's talking about the leaven of the Pharisees, in other words, that which
Which
makes the
the
Pharisees
Pharisees
who
who
they
they are.
are. And what he's talking about here is they are prejudiced, they are stuck in traditional bondage, and they can't escape this.
This
And
and
the
the problem
problem is this: Paul the Apostle comes along and puts them right back in the
the
same
same bondage.
bondage. Okay, that's my point here. What he did is he came in and started teaching the same prejudices and the same bondage because he was raised up in these same concepts. So when they started the Christian church, he tried to rebondicize, if you would, all the population in these same principles, which Jesus is
Jesus
talking about setting everyone free
is
from. Okay, I think that's very important that we understand these. All right. And then he goes on to tell us that everything that he's trying to teach us or teach them back then will presently be revealed. And in essence, y'all, what I'm saying is the Urantia book and the
The
teachings
teachings
in
in
the
the
Urantia
Urantia
book
book
about
about
Jesus's
Jesus'
life is
life.
that revelation, is that explanation of what Jesus was trying to tell us. Everything will be revealed to the populace so they can know straight out what he was talking about. Okay.
Roger.
Back then, they couldn't understand it. Yeah, Rodney.
But I think that which is now hid from you shall all be made known when the Son of Man has completed his mission on earth and in the flesh. I
Yes.
believe what he is saying is that he's going to come back in Maruncha form.
Yes.
So
That's true, but not
which
only
will be
that,
left
but
hidden
at
at
the
the
end of this, at the end of that, those 19 appearances, not only that, he poured out the spirit of poured out the spirit of sooth, poured out the spirit of
the truth.
truth, and the Holy Spirit
It
became
became
more
more
actual
actual.
because of the pouring out the spirit of truth. So the spirit of truth becomes what? The teacher in his place. You see what I'm saying? So the last 2,000 years, the Spirit of Truth's job was to reveal
Reveal
these
these hidden
hidden
concepts
concepts to us up to
to
the point of the
the
next
next
revelation.
revelation.
And
And
what
what
was
was
the
the
next
next
revelation?
revelation?
You're echoing.
Urantia book,
Diane
right?
needs to mute.
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, sorry.
There.
So does that make sense? So the new teacher was coming, but not only that, when the new teacher come, what happened? Everything became totally confused because of a philosophy and a theology of someone that came along after all of this and didn't learn any of it from Jesus. You follow me? You see where the confusion comes in here? So we should have called the New Testament the Testament of Paul. Okay, and it should have been the religion of Paul because it wasn't Jesus's gospel. That's what I'm saying. And I know that sounds harsh, but that's the best way you can say it. All right, so let's go on. Pam, would you take the next one?
Soon, very soon, will the things which our enemies now plan in secrecy and in darkness be brought out into the light and be proclaimed from the housetops. But I say to you, my friends, when they seek to destroy the Son of Man, be not afraid of them. Fear not those who, although they may be able to kill the body, after that, have no more power over you. I admonish you to fear none in heaven or on earth, but to rejoice in the knowledge of him who has the power to deliver you from all unrighteousness and to present you blameless before the judgment seat of the of a universe.
And who is that? Jesus.
Ancients of days.
Huh?
Ancients of days.
Yeah, the judgment seat is the Ancients of Days. That's correct. But who is it that can free you from all of this? Not only Jesus, but there's another individual. The thought adjuster, right? The thought adjuster is there to teach you and bring you into all knowledge and righteousness and help build your soul. Right. So when Jesus is saying here that in heaven or no, but to rejoice in the knowledge of him who has power to deliver you from all unrighteousness, and that would be the thought adjuster. You follow me? See where
That's
this
right.
fits in? Okay. And then when you sit before the judgment seat, that's of course the Ancients of Days. Now, later on in these paragraphs tonight, he makes a mention of your guardian angels representing you before judgment. And this is directly related to the stuff I was talking about in the book on angels, how that the guardian angels are the one that justifies your life after death. Okay, your guardian of destiny. All right. Andrew, would you take the next one, please?
Yes. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? And yet, when these birds flit about in quest of their sustenance, not one of them exists without the knowledge of the Father, the source of all life. To the seraphic guardians, the very hairs of your head are numbered. And if all of this is true, why should you live in fear of the many trifles which come up in your daily lives? I say to you, fear not, you are of much more value than many sparrows.
Okay, so
That's
he makes two
comforting.
references here. First of all, the knowledge of the Father of all the source of all life, but he also mentions the seraphic guardians here, knowing the numbers of hair in your heads, and that's a literal truth, okay? And That's one of the things I talked about in the angel book. But he's saying to you, there is nothing in heaven or on earth that you should ever fear. Now, the thing is this, Jesus foresaw all this persecution that was coming to the early church, didn't he? He already knew this was going to happen and what was going to happen. So he's preparing the followers for these very things to happen. And by telling him about this stuff, he's trying to prepare their souls that no matter what happens, they know everything is going to work out just fine. All right. Now, Gary, would you take the next one?
All of you who have had the courage to confess faith in my gospel before men, I presently acknowledge before the angels of heaven. But you who shall knowingly deny the truth of my teachings before men shall be denied by his guardian of destiny, even before the angels of heaven.
You see what this is saying here?
Yeah, you deny me, you're in trouble.
You deny me, you're in trouble. If you deny me now on this earth, when you get after you die, your guardians of destiny will deny that you did what you're supposed to do before the judgment in heaven, basically. Okay, so it works both ways. In order to get the forgiveness you need in this life, you have to not only acknowledge that, you make errors, but also you need to confess that faith before not only men and angels, but everyone in your life. When you comes to a situation in your daily life, when someone asks you, do you believe in Jesus? If you deny Jesus, guess what's going to happen? Then the angels have an opportunity to deny you before the judgment of the Ancients of Days. You see what I'm saying? It works all together. All right. Let's go on. I say what you will, say what you will about the Son of Man, and it shall be forgiven you. But he who presumes to blasphemy against God shall hardly find forgiveness. And if you look at the New Testament, they call this the unforgivable sin. Okay. When men go as far as knowingly to ascribe the doings of God to forces of evil, such deliberate rebels will hardly seek forgiveness for their sins. And why does he say that? Because those who rebel become iniquitous, don't they? Because of the habit of doing sin over and over and over again. So when they become iniquitous, they have no desire anymore to seek forgiveness for their sin. You see
Correct.
what I'm saying? All right.
Roger.
Yeah.
It's not that God doesn't forgive them. It's they're so evil that they don't ask for forgiveness.
And they reject God, right?
Yeah.
They go from asking for forgiveness to the rejection of the concept of God totally. That's what the Urantia book calls what? A final decision. Right? When they talk about a final decision, and it's the final decision that can keep you from surviving. Right? Okay, so it's very important.
Andrew has a question.
Yeah, Andrew. Turn your mic back on, Andrew.
Sorry. I was going to say that in Christianity, the unforgivable sin is often taught as not, you can't do it now because it was only during the time of Jesus, and it was what it just says, ascribing the good works of Jesus, which he's doing in the power of God, the power of the Holy Spirit, to Satan, like when the Pharisees called him Beelzebub. That's how it's always been taught to me.
In the
But
Christian
it's,
church. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
and I'm saying, but it sounds, and so then it's like, like we can't commit this, and no
Yeah.
matter what we do, and to any degree and whatever, it will just always be forgiven because God's grace is greater than our sin. But it sounds like this, you can kind of willingly choose to rebel and assign, good works to,
The devil.
well, what
Yeah,
does it say? Yeah.
the
And so you can
concept of the
commit this
devil and sin.
whenever. Yes.
And we know that the devil no, does no longer exist in our in our world, but that's still the same principle. You're assigning good to evil, making everything upside down and backwards.
Yes.
And it's kind of interesting that unforgivable sin part really is, if you think about, rebellion against God. That's what it all boils down to, right? If you think about it, it's not really so much blasphemy against God, because people do that constantly. And the epidemic of cursing on this planet has gone totally nuts, right? I mean, you listen to anything on TV, YouTube, the regular TV or anything, there's cursing all the way through everything now. It's because of lack of respect. I can tell you what it is. It's a lack of respect of other people and lack of respect for oneself, because they don't think that what they say is important enough for people to believe unless they curse about it. Okay. So it's an uneducated thing to do more than anything, because if you become more educated and become a philosopher and a theologian and people like that, what do? You try to get those sort of things out of your life and out of your vocabulary, because that you realize they're meaningless garbage that's coming out of your mouth. Okay.
I'm sorry, I had to just mute my speaker because my kid was talking to me. Can you just, what did you say at the very beginning of this? Was it just that, sorry, that just that
That's all
people
right. I don't know if
wouldn't
I
be
can remember what
cursing?
I said exactly.
Well,
What I would The point was that if you blasphemy against God, okay, really, that does not matter to God that you're doing it. The thing that matters is the rebellion part. When you rebel against God, anything you do to rebel against God is an affront to God, literally. And then I was talking about what I was talking about, though, Andrew, is the fact that we have gotten into this habit in society of letting this filth just come out of our mouth all the time, right? And it becomes a habit. And as it becomes a habit, the words lose their meaning. But because of that, it shows that, number one, you're uneducated, you're not spiritual, and these things mean nothing to you. And you feel like, personally, you have to say these words to make your point have meaning. And it's just the opposite. If you're intelligent enough and you know what you say is worthwhile, you don't need these outside things like cursing, especially the F word and things like that, constantly to make your point. Because if that's the case, you're not spiritually strong enough to make a point that anyone is interested in listening to in the first place. Make sense? I don't want to overplay that, but I think that's a good point to understand. And all this cursing needs to come out of society. It needs to come out of the internet. It needs to come off the TV. It needs to be taken out of movies and all these things. And you in the past, it wasn't that way. It's because we've become so loose in morals in society to make it acceptable, when it never has been acceptable. It's not acceptable. So I think I'll step off my soapbox on that, if y'all don't mind.
I step on the box then?
All right, who's
I
next? I lost my place here again. Gary,
think
did you?
you,
No, I just read, so Diane, go. Yeah.
How long will you tarry in the valley of decision? Why do you halt between two opinions? Why should Jew or Gentile hesitate to accept the good news that he is a son of the eternal God? How long will it take us to persuade you to enter joyfully into your spiritual inheritance? I came into the world to reveal the Father to you and to lead you to the Father. The first I have done, but the last I may not do without your consent. The Father never compels any man to enter the kingdom. The invitation ever has been and always will be, whosoever will let him come and freely partake of the water of life.
I kind of missed that meeting there.
You're muted,
I'm
Roger.
muted again. First of all, the first part of it, Jesus talks about his bestowal. Okay? He came into this world to reveal the Father. That was the purpose of his bestowal, was it not? To
Yes.
show us the Father in heaven, okay? And to lead you to the Father, okay? But when you listen to my next two videos, I think come out the 15th and 16th or 14th and 15th, one of the two, about chapter 7 on the book of the thought adjuster, you will find out the very next sentence is straight out of that. Okay, the fact that no one can compel you to understand or love the Father without your consent. What is that? That's free will, right?
Yes.
You have to have free will. And that's why free will is the ultimate thing with the thought adjuster. The thought adjuster will never teach you or lead you without your will to do that. So. Okay. So if you want to learn from God, if you want to do God's will, you have to be willing to consent. That's what he's saying here. You have to consent to that leading. You have to consent to the will of God, to let the will of God come through your life. And that is through your thought adjuster. All right. So, and then he goes on to tell us that the invitation from God always has been and always will be what?
Open.
Whoever,
Whosoever will.
whose ever will, let him come and freely take of the water of life. And what is the water of life? The spiritual life. Okay? You're not here just for the material stuff. You're here for the spiritual life as well. You can't have a material life without integrating the spiritual life and grow, because if you do, your material life will end up nothing. And when you get to the mansion worlds, you're going to have a blank slate on your hand because the adjuster could not teach you the spiritual part of life. You follow me? You have to be open to it and willing to accept it.
You know, you just made it me think something. It's revelation, maybe a first time, but kind of realized the American drive for the material things in life is kind of contrary to the tendency to go to the spiritual side, because we spend so much time in attaining and acquiring and paying for the materials. And I think it distracts from the spiritual side of life. And it kind of makes me have a greater understanding of why some of the so-called spiritual leaders are very less materialistic.
Yeah, it's a curse, basically, if you think about it. If you're cursed with wanting things, if you're cursed with the material part of life, then you set aside the spiritual things in your life. And so you don't benefit for the spiritual as much as you do for the material. It's hard for us to understand the material things in life means absolutely what?
Nothing.
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 That really does. Because this is just. We're short timers. Any way you look at it, we said this in the military constantly. I'm a short timer. When you get to the end, all these things you've been through don't mean anything because you're getting out and you're starting all over again. Okay? So, really, in this life, our whole life is short timers. We're here to experience things and to gain little things along the way, but all this material crap that we gather along the way is absolutely useless. Okay. Other than giving us a place to live and food and things like that, it means absolutely nothing. Okay. And that's a hard concept to get. Now, I'm going to hit on it again. I probably am going to upset everybody out there that's listening again. These preachers that tell you to send them their money and you're going to be blessed and all this stuff by sending them their money, it's a lie. It's garbage. It's crap. Okay, so don't listen to that. You don't get blessed by sending some guy money that's going to build up his church and get buy his Mercedes and buy him a new plane, because these things mean nothing. I don't care what they say. Okay,
You
so
know,
be careful how you spend your money, and don't give them to charlatans. That's all there is to it. So.
the fact that they're preaching the material side of the spiritual thing is indication that they're not a man of God, for the
They're
simple
not.
reason I
They're
just
not
mentioned
disciples of
earlier.
Christ, I can tell you that. Not the
No,
Christ we know, right?
I
Because
actually.
we're going to find that out later in this paper tonight, too. He makes it very, very clear. All right,
I
so.
actually, several years ago, was asked to go fishing at a lake on a church property. Met with one of the ministers. He says, "Oh, how am I doing?" I says, "How are you doing?" He says, "Oh, I'm being blessed by God, with money and all this, that he was flourishing and stuff like that." And I never went to the services naturally because of that. He goes, "I didn't know God was making you rich, you
Yeah.
know."
Did you get a gold coin in the fish's mouth when you caught
No.
it?
Matter of fact, you want to know the truth? The lake is almost barren.
That kind of says something about the church, probably.
It really is very, very bad fishing.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go on to the next one. Who's up next?
I am.
All right, Rodney, you don't get
I
away
think.
this easy. I'm going to make you real too.
That's
Yeah.
I get him. Get him. Go ahead and get him for me.
Go ahead
So
and
when
take it.
Jesus had finished speaking, many went forth to be baptized by the apostles in the Jordan, while he listened to the questions of those who remained.
Okay, take the first one here, dividing the inheritance.
For dividing the inheritance. As the apostles baptized believers, the master talked with those who tarried. And a certain young man said to him, "Master, my father died, leaving much property to me and my brother. But my brother refused to give me that which is my own. Will you then bid my brother divide his inheritance with me?" Jesus was mildly indignant that this material-minded youth should bring up for discussion such a question of business. But he proceeded to use the occasion for the impartation of further instruction. Said Jesus, "Man, who made me a divider over you? Where did you get the idea that I give attention to the material affairs of this world?" And then, turning to all who were about him, he said, "Take heed and keep yourselves free from covetousness. A man's life consists not in the abundance of things which he may possess. Happiness comes not from the power of wealth, and joy springs not from riches. Wealth in itself is not a curse, but the love of riches many times leads to such devotion to things of this world that the soul becomes blinded to the beautiful attractions of the spiritual realities of the kingdom of God on earth and to the joys of eternal life in heaven."
So it wipes out the possibility of seeing the beauty of the spiritual life in place of the material world, which is temporary, right? Any way you look at it, the things of this world do not what? They do not last. There's nothing lasting in this world. I can tell you that from working on a Studebaker for a couple of years and realizing one day, why am I doing this? Are you a fool? That's what it comes down to. All right, let's move on. Pam, would you take the next one?
Sorry, I just wanted to say real
Yeah.
quick that, yeah, I just had a lesson in a small group about Jesus saying, "I have come to bring life and life to the full." And I was
Yes.
trying to tell them that, like, this is someone who was homeless and didn't have a place to lay his head, wasn't a politician, didn't live in a mansion, didn't have a 401k, didn't drive a Porsche, didn't. And he's saying he's bringing life to the full. So it's like he must be speaking about something else than material goods, but so many people in Christianity just miss this very clear point of this homeless traveling preacher person.
They immediately think the joys of life have something to do with all the material things instead of the spiritual things in life, right?
I got to give you a credit that you're a brave person. They could have tar and fe feathered you for that statement.
All right, Pam, would you take the next one, please?
Yeah. Let me tell you a story of a certain rich man whose ground brought forth plentifully. And when he had become very rich, he began to reason with himself, saying, "What shall I do with all my riches? I now have so much that I have no place to store my wealth." And when he had me meditated on his problem, he said, "This I will do. I will pull down my barns and build greater ones. And thus I will have abundant room in which to store my fruits and my goods. Then can I say to my soul, 'Soul, you have much wealth laid up for many years. Take now your ease, eat, drink, and be merry, for you are rich and increased in goods.'"
Okay, look at all the movie stars that's done this very thing, didn't they? They didn't have enough room, so they had to build bigger things to hold all their cars and jewels and things that they didn't need, right? All right,
You
let's
want to
go on.
know the, I'm glad you brought that up. You want to know the how to tell the real people in Hollywood from the what I don't know what you call them, jerks. Okay, look where they live. The real characters, the real people, the good people of Hollywood, they don't live in Hollywood.
Yeah, they don't live in mansions, they live in modest homes, right?
Yeah, I
But
mean, yeah.
yeah, because they got their needle set at the right place, right, as they say.
I'll give you an idea. Elon Musk, who's supposed to be one of the richest men, if not the richest man in the world,
The richest.
he is the richest. He lives in a relatively modest house. Once I saw somebody ask him why, and he says, "That's all I need."
Yeah, what else do you need in life, right? You don't need all the rest. All right, let's move on. Andrew, would you take the next one?
Yeah. But this rich man was also foolish. In providing for the material requirements of his mind and body, he had failed to lay up treasures in heaven for the satisfaction of the spirit and for the salvation of the soul. And even then, he was not to enjoy the pleasure of consuming his hoarded wealth, for that very night was his soul required of him. That night there came the brigands who broke into his house to kill him, and after they had plundered his barns, they burned that which remained. And for the property which escaped the robbers, his heirs fell to fighting among themselves. This man laid up treasures for himself on earth, but he was not rich toward God.
Okay, so what's this teach us, poor people? Huh?
We're
It te
blessed.
we're blessed. That's exactly right. Because we learn how to lay up treasures in heaven. And what are the treasures in heaven? That's the soul growth during your life. Okay, that's your adjuster teaching you spiritual lessons as you go day by day. And how do you increase that? By doing the will of the Father every single day. So every decision you make, you ask yourself, what would God do in this certain situation? What would the Father want me to do? And it becomes a habit, it's habitual. And when you start doing that every single day on every single decision, that's how you plug in to that thought adjuster. Okay, people say, well, how do I know it's the thought adjuster? It becomes habitual that the thought adjuster helps you know. Okay. Any way you look at it, it's part on the papers on how the thought adjuster. Okay. Let's move on. Gary.
Jesus thus dealt with the young man and his inheritance because he knew that this trouble was
Covetousness.
covered. Okay, thank you. Even if this had not been this case, the master would not have interfered, for he never interfered
Meddled, yeah.
with the temporal affairs of even his apostles,
So he
much
didn't
less his.
even interfere with his apostles' financial problems and that kind of thing, right? He let them experience their own lives in dealing with these things. And why would he do that? Because he knew that the growth of their own soul would come about as this, from this. Okay. All right. Roger, would you take the next one? Okay. All right, here we go. When Jesus had finished the story, another man rose up and asked him, Master, I know that your apostles have sold all their earthly possessions to follow you, and that you have all things in common as do the Essenes. But would you have all of us who are your disciples do likewise? Is it a sin to possess honest wealth? And Jesus replied to this question, my friend, it is not a sin to have honorable wealth, but it is a sin when you convert the wealth of material possessions into treasures, which may absorb your interest and divert your affection from devotion to the spiritual pursuits of the kingdom. And I know this is true because I've done it in my own life before, right? We all do, sooner or later. All right. There is no sin in having honest possessions on earth, provided your treasure is in heaven, which where your treasure is, there your heart be also. There's a great difference between wealth and which leads to covetousness and selfishness, and that which held and dispensed in the spirit of stewardship by those who have an abundance of this world's goods and who so bountifully contribute to the support of those who devote all their energies to the work of the kingdom. Many of you who are here and without money are fed and lodged in yonder tented city because liberal men and women of means have given funds to your host, David Zebedee, for such purpose. So there's a perfect example of how you can use your wealth to help those who are working from God, right? Any way you look at it. So that's a perfect example. Now, if the churches out there, let me see if I can get rid of this. Okay. If the churches out there that are taking in all this money, instead of buying airplanes for their preachers and Mercedes and multiple cars and mansions and, putting gold on their facilities and things like that, if they used all that money for the betterment of mankind, it would be a totally different story, wouldn't it? I mean, any way you look at it. All right.
Roger, I got to tell you the story.
Yeah.
At one time, I was even a deacon in a church. It was a good church, don't get me wrong. Anyway, they sent us to a seminar, and one of the things I attended, how to time manage, because it was very demanding. And the guy that was taught it was a minister, and he had a very unique approach. He was, very personable and honest and good person. And so I asked him, you have a church? He goes, no, they don't like me. They don't know what to do with me. I goes, and he told a story. He was a minister of a church and, had the church building and the towers and all that stuff. And he talked the congregation into selling it. They went into and he rented a store front, well, small building to do their things, practical things, Set chairs up on Sunday and had Boy Scout meetings and Girl Scout meetings in it for the people. And they took the money they got from the church and they fed poor people and stuff like that. And the church didn't really like
Yeah,
that.
they weren't getting their stipend any longer,
And
right?
it dawned on me that, you know what? He really believed in what he did.
Yeah, he did, or he
And
wouldn't have tried to do that, right?
I
I
mean,
mean,
I still to this day admire him. I have no idea what happened to him subsequently, but at that particular time, he was without a church.
All right, Diane's going to take the next one.
Would never forget that after all, wealth is unending and enduring. The love of riches all too often occurs and even destroys the spiritual vision. Fail not to recognize the danger of wealth becoming not your servant, but your master.
Okay, so I got a warning for y'all here, okay, that you're probably not going to like, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Not only is wealth unenduring, marriage and love sometimes is also unenduring. And why is that? Because we change over time. And if we don't work on our relationship every single day, this can also happen with your relationship with your spouse. That love can become what? Unenduring. Okay. Now, let me tell you a little secret how to keep that from happening. Your spiritual love is always what? Enduring. Always. If you can keep that spiritual connection in your relationship with your wife, your children, that sort of thing, then that will make that relationship what?
Enduring.
Enduring. That's exactly right. Makes sense? And I didn't even charge y'all for that one, so that's just free advice. All right, and there's the Roman coin. All right, I stuck that in there because we were talking about money. So anyway. Okay, here we go. Once again, Rodney, would you take the next one?
Yes. Jesus did not teach nor countenance improvidence, idleness, indifference to providing the physical necessities for one's family or dependence upon alms. But he did teach that the material and temporal must be subordinated to the welfare of the soul and the progress of the spiritual nature in the kingdom of heaven.
So it's hard to do the spiritual work when you're hungry, isn't it?
That's
Yeah,
very
right.
true.
Yeah, that's right. So you have to make sacrifices for feeding and clothing and housing your family, that sort of thing. So, all
Well,
right, Pamela, would you?
Jesus did that. He worked.
Yeah, he first 30 some years of his life, that's what he did, right? Exactly. So,
Bought a
all right.
house for his family to provide income when he wasn't there. And I mean,
That's
he,
exactly right. And that's not recorded in the New Testament, is it?
oh no.
No, of
No.
course not. All right. Pam, would you take the next one?
Then, as the people went down by the river to witness the baptizing, the first man came privately to Jesus about the inheritance, inasmuch as he thought Jesus had dealt harshly with him. And when the master had again heard him, he replied, "My son, why do you miss the opportunity to feed upon the bread of life on a day like this in order to indulge your covetous disposition? Do you not know that the Jewish laws of inheritance will be justly administered if you will go with your complaint to the court of the synagogue? Can you not see that my work has to do with making sure that you know about your heavenly inheritance? Have you not read the scripture? There is he who waxes riches, who waxes rich by his weariness and much pinching."
Penny pinching, right? That's what he's talking
Oh,
about. Yeah.
yeah. And
Okay.
this is the portion of his continually of no
No.
portion of his
Reward.
continually
No,
no
of his reward.
reward.
Okay.
Whereas he says,
Reward. Whereas he says, I have found rest and now shall be able to eat continually of my goods. Yet he knows not what time shall bring upon him, and also that he must leave all these things to others when he dies. Have you not read the commandment, you shall not covet? And again, they have eaten and filled themselves and waxed fat, and then did they turn to other gods. Have you read in the Psalms that the Lord abhors the covetous, and that the little a righteous man has a better
Is better.
has is better than the riches of many wicked? If riches increase, set not your heart upon them. Have you read when Jeremiah said, let not the rich man glory in his riches? And Ezekiel spoke truth when he said, with their mouths they make a show of love, but their hearts are set upon their own selfish gain.
Does that sound like some of these mega churches? Their hearts are set upon their own selfish gain, not on their love.
It sounds like every single CEO in America right now.
It does. It
Right.
does. And all the politicians, I have to put that one into all of them. There's no those none of them that does not do this. You know, it's part of the program. It's part of the business of being a politician, right? All right. You see why Jesus did not get involved in politics, don't you? I mean, there's just no way to do that. All right. Andrew, can you take the next one? You don't get off this easy either.
Jesus sent the young man away, saying to him, my son, what shall it profit you if you gain the whole world and lose your own soul?
Is that not a
Oh.
famous quote? How many times have you heard that? Right. All right. I don't even have to say anything. So will you take the next one too, Jeff,
Okay.
Andy?
To another standing nearby who asked Jesus how the wealthy would stand in the day of judgment, he replied, I have come to judge neither the rich nor the poor, but the lives men live will sit in judgment on all. Whatever else may concern the wealthy in the judgment, at least three questions must be answered by all who acquire great wealth, and these questions are,
All right, Gary, give us our three questions here.
You asked a poor man about this question,
Yes.
Number one, how much wealth did you accumulate? Number two, how did you get this wealth? Number three, how did you use your wealth?
And why did he ask these three questions, y'all? It's very simple. He talked about this when he was in Rome. He outlined what the proper way to distribute and take care of wealth. All right, so how much wealth did you accumulate? Was it just a small amount? If it's just a small amount, you need to take care of your family and what's close to you, right? How did you get this wealth? Was this gain in wealth something that was illegal or wrong? If it was, it needs to be returned to those that you had taken it from. And the third question is, how did you use this wealth? What kind of steward were you with this wealth, with other beings so that surround you? Okay, so it's a very simple concept, right? And all three of these are gone over in great detail in the while he was in Rome and talking to, you know, how to distribute wealth. All right.
Got a question for you.
Yeah.
What would Jesus think about the government giving you a tax deduction for your church?
He wouldn't think anything about that, Gary, because he was not involved in the political organization of the government of the planet whatsoever. Okay. Those sort of things are determined by decisions that we make as a group on the planet. So that's part of it's part of the celestial management of the planet, but it's more part of the human management of the planet. And what we decide as in groups becomes acceptable. Like Jesus said many times in during his ministry, that whatever you accept as a group will be accepted as the process for heaven. So in other words, however you want to run the church is fine, but whatever you decide, you not must decide as a democracy group that all agree upon how things should be done. And that's what he would say about the taxes and stuff like that. So he would not make a decision one way or the other. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I would
Yeah.
just idea that passed through my empty head.
No, that's okay. That's why we're here. All right. Diane, I think you're up next. Or am I up next? You're up. Go ahead and read this.
Then Jesus went into his tent to rest for a while before the evening meal. When the apostles had finished with the baptizing, they came also and would have talked with him about wealth on earth and treasure in heaven, but he was asleep. That's right.
Can I ask a question? Baptism is not a requirement. Isn't Jesus went along with baptism just as a symbolism?
You're muted, Roger.
He went along with it because that was part of accepting John the Baptist's apostles in the group with the other apostles. Okay. And that's why he went along with it. It was an acceptance to the group, so he accepted it also, not required it. And that's one of the reasons he submitted himself to baptism by John in the Jordan River to show his outward support for what was supposed to happen, right? Now, we got 9 minutes, we got 10 slides, y'all. Do y'all want to try to get through this?
Yes, sure.
Okay, we'll read fast. I won't say much. I'll go ahead and take the first one. Talks to the apostles on wealth. That evening after supper, when Jesus and the 12 gathered together for their daily conference, Andrew asked, "Master, while we were baptizing the believers, you spoke many words to the lingering multitude, which we did not hear. Would you be willing to repeat these words for our benefits?" And Jesus, in response to Andrew's request, said, Rodney, would you take the next?
Yes, Andrew, I will speak to you about these matters of wealth and self-support, but my words to you, the apostles, must be somewhat different from those spoken to the disciples and the multitude, since you are forsaking everything, not only to follow me, but to be ordained as ambassadors of the kingdom.
Rodney, let me stick something in here. So he's just talking thus to the apostles, not the disciples. Okay, go ahead,
Right.
Rodney.
Already have you had several years' experience, and you know that the Father, whose kingdom you proclaim, will not forsake you. You have to dedicated your lives to the ministry of the kingdom. Therefore, be not anxious or worried about the things of the temporal life, what you shall eat, nor yet for your body, what you shall wear. The welfare of the soul is more than food and drink. The progress in the spirit is far above the need of raiment. When you are tempted to doubt the sureness of your bread, consider the ravens. They sow, neither reap. They have no storehouses or barns, and yet the Father provides food for every one of them that seeks it. And of how much more value are you than many birds? Besides, all of your anxiety or fretting doubts can do nothing to supply your material needs. Which one of you, by anxiety, can add a handbreadth to your stature or a day to your life? Since such matters are not in your hands, why do you give anxious thought to any of these problems?
So if you're a servant of God, you shouldn't have to worry about any of this, right? Nothing whatsoever. But the trick is, you must be a servant of God. Pam, would you take the next?
Yeah. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. Yet I say to you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is cut down and cast into the fire, how much more shall he clothe you, the ambassadors of the heavenly kingdom? O you of little faith, when you wholeheartedly devote yourselves to the proclamation of the gospel of the kingdom, you should not be of doubtful minds concerning the support of yourselves or the families you have forsaken. If you give your lives truly to the gospel, you shall live by the gospel. If you're only believing disciples, you must earn your own bread and contribute to the sustenance of all who teach and preach and heal. If you are anxious about your bread and water, wherein are you different from the nations of the world who so diligently seek such necessities? Devote yourselves to your work, believing that both the Father and I know that you have need of all these things. Let me assure you once and for all that if you dedicate your lives to the work of the kingdom, all your real needs shall be supplied. Seek the greater thing, and the lesser will be found therein. Ask for the heavenly, and the earthly shall be included. The shadow is certain to follow the substance.
So, in essence, if you dedicate your life to teaching the gospel and preaching the gospel, those things that you need should be added on. Andrew, would you take the next one?
You are only a small group, but if you have faith, if you will not stumble in fear, I declare that it is my Father's good pleasure to give you his kingdom. You have laid up your treasures where the purse waxes not old, where no thief can despoil, and where no moth can destroy. And as I told the people, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Because that's where your mind is all the time, right? On your treasure. Gary, would you take the next one?
But in the work which is just ahead of us, and in that which remains for you after I go to the Father, I will be grievously tired.
You will be grievously tied. This is where the
Tired.
persecutions come in, right?
Okay. You will be grievously tried. You must all be on your watch against fear and doubts. Every one of you, gird up the loins of your minds and let your lamps be kept burning. Keep yourselves like men who are watching for their master to return from the marriage feast, so that when he comes and knocks, you may quickly open to him. Such watchful servants are blessed by the master, who finds them faithful at such a great moment. Then will the master make his servants sit down while he himself serves them. Verily, verily, I say to you that a crisis is just ahead in your lives, and I will behoove you to watch and be ready.
So Jesus already foresees what's coming, and he's warning his apostles about this. You will understand that no man would suffer his house to be broken into if he knew what hour the thief was to come. So also on watch for you, also be also on watch for yourselves, for in an hour that you least suspect, and in a manner in which you think not, shall the Son of Man depart. In other words, he's talking about when he's going to leave, but that also is true about when he comes back. Let me read another little. For some minutes, the 12 sat in silence, some of the warnings they heard before, but not in the setting presented by them at this time. Diane.
Six, answer to P Peter's question. As they sat thinking, Simon Peter asked, "Do you speak this parable to us, your apostles, or is it for all the disciples? And Jesus answered,
You're muted, but I think it's my time. In the time of testing, a man's soul is revealed. Trial discloses what really is in the heart. When the servant is tested and proved, then may the Lord of the house set such a servant over his household and safely trust this faithful steward to see that his children are fed and nurtured. Likewise, will I soon know who can be trusted with the welfare of my children when I shall have returned to the Father, as the Lord of the household shall set the true and tried servant over the affairs of his family. So will I exalt those who endure the trials of this hour in the affairs of my kingdom.
So he's going to be very choosy about who takes over after he leaves, right? Pam, would you take the next one?
Lord have mercy. But if the servant is slothful and begins to say in his heart, my master delays his coming, and begins to mistreat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunken, then the Lord of that servant will come at a time when he looks not for him, and finding him unfaithful, will cast him out in disgrace. Therefore, you do well to prepare yourselves for that day when you will be visited suddenly and in an unexpected manner. Remember, much has been given to you, therefore will much be required of you. Fiery trials are drawing near you. I have a baptism to be baptized with, and I am on watch until this is accomplished. You preach peace on earth, but my mission will not bring peace in the material affairs of men, not for a time at least. Division can only be the result where two members of a family believe in me and three members reject this gospel. Friends, relatives, and loved ones are destined to be set against each other by the gospel you preach. True, each of these believers shall have great and lasting peace in his own heart, but peace on earth will not come until all will be until all are willing to believe and enter into their glorious inheritance of sonship with God. Nevertheless, go into all the world proclaiming this gospel to all nations, to every man, woman, and child.
So two members of the same family may believe differently. It's going to break up families even. All right. And the last paragraph is for you, Andrew. Still, we made it 4 minutes after, I guess. Yeah.
And this was the end of a full and busy Sabbath day. On the morrow, Jesus and the 12 went into the cities of northern Perea to visit with the 70 who were working in these regions under Abner's supervision.
Okay, and that's all of that paper. Let me swap out the share. Paired acceptance. All right. Gary, you want to read the prayer of acceptance for us tonight?
Yes. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I became a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebadon, as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to reclaim my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. In the name of Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, amen.
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 And we're not too bad over. We're 7:04, so we did pretty good.
Yeah.
So next time we'll go into the last visit to Northern Perea, paper 166. And thanks everyone for coming and joining us. Make sure you subscribe, share it, give us a thumbs up, whatever you do on whatever format you're in, and come and join us next time, which will be Thursday. If I can remember correctly, today is Tuesday, right? Yeah.
Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Love you
everybody, for
guys. Thank
coming.
you.
Y'all have a
See
great night. All
you
right.
Thursday.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Night.